W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the story of a very...
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Few signs of the chaos at the southern border that was feared following a rush by worried migrants to enter the U.S. before the end of Title 42 pandemic-related immigration restrictions. But there's scarce room for the asylum seekers that have already arrived. ABC's Matt Rivers is at the border in El Paso, Texas.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of migrants that were camped out have all finally been taken in by immigration officials. But here on the U.S. side, so many migrants have crossed that authorities simply do not have the capacity to hold all of them while asylum claims are processed.
G7 top financial leaders ending 3 days of talks in Japan, pledging to bring inflation under control, strengthening supply chains. Both Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Trump getting up close and personal with voters in Iowa today. The FDA approving the first once-a-day hormone-free treatment for menopause related to hot flashes. Holds hope for women who can't take hormone treatments because of underlying health concerns. This is ABC News. Ukrainian forces making advances in the contested city of Bakhmut. ABC's Marcus Moore is in Ukraine.
Ukrainian forces advancing, pushing back Russian troops as Ukraine prepares for its expected major counteroffensive. Ukrainian forces saying they're making a number of successful counterattacks around Bakhmut, inflicting heavy casualties on Russian fighters, forcing some to run from their positions. Now Russia, which has spent months making Bakhmut its main offensive goal, not only failing to fully take the prize region, but reportedly suffering more setbacks in its war effort.
The UN Friday says it welcomes a ceasefire deal in Sudan that allows for the safe passage of civilians fleeing the conflict. Al-Harith Idris Al-Hadrith Mohammed, Sudan's ambassador to the UN, saying conditions there are only getting worse.
There is urgent need for humanitarian services at the border crossings, which witness a crowding of citizens wishing to cross the border with children, elderly, and sick. The humanitarian condition is bad.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Great to listen to while having a Lineys and grilling some Sheboygan brats. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media. And don't forget the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Spring is almost here, and that means the environment will get a few months off from damaging road salt. There's a bill in the Wisconsin legislature to certify people who apply road salt and encourage them to do it responsibly. Mike Moen reports.
The DNR would be tasked with establishing training for individual commercial applicators who would learn methods for spreading snow and ice melting products that protect water quality. Representative Elijah Benke is a lead sponsor on the assembly side and noted the impact of salt ending up in waterways is becoming hard to ignore.
Harmful effects have been noticed in our native aquatic organisms and other freshwater ecosystems.
To ease any concerns from the business community, the bill has language surrounding liability protections to shield applicators from lawsuits stemming from a slip and fall incident. Others who testified noted the plan can reduce salt from being spread around while still protecting public safety. The measure has bipartisan support as well as backing from environmental advocates. University of Wisconsin professor Hillary Dugan testified in support of the bill. Speaking on her own behalf, she noted efforts to curb salt use go beyond protecting habitat and waterways.
And this hurts recreational activities, it hurts property values. Thinking about if your private groundwater well gets salty, your property values reduced, you're left without drinkable water.
Dugan says state and local snowplow operators have made strides in being more efficient with their application of road salt or switching to less harmful products. She says incentivizing private contractors can accelerate progress. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
Over
on
if you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome back to this, our second hour here on Morning Cannolis. It is Saturday, May 13th. Thank you so much for joining me and my terrific producer, Anya, here in the studios of Civic Media, enjoying, as always, your comments, your calls, your observations about the law in America, government in America, the aspiration for justice in our land. Right before the break, the hour, the top of the hour break, we were talking about a number of different issues implicating the rule of law overseas and then in our own nation. I was chatting with Bill. Bill, I'm glad you're still on the line to talk about what our focus needs to be right now, not only in the midst of this matter involving Title 42 going away, Title 8 now back in place, and the management, maybe not a crisis as it's playing out, but nonetheless a management challenge for Border Patrol, for the immigration services, for local, state, and federal government, as people from Mexico, from other South American countries, come into our nation seeking entry here properly and through the appropriate procedures. Bill, you were making the point that while an awful lot of people are pointing fingers at each other, government, and specifically our federal government, not acting to pass and place in order an omnibus immigration system. I'll give you another opportunity or so to fully discuss your point there, Bill. And then I also want to pick up on something else you said, which is the need to focus on other domestic issues, including our gun problem in America. But Bill, go ahead with your additional thought when we began right before the break. Bill, are you still with us? All right. And if not, Bill, you know what? Stay with us. And Bill, if you come back, I'll be delighted to have you here. Bill, along the way, had commented right before the top of the hour that one of the other issues that our government desperately needs to look at and to address and resolve in some reasonable ways is our gun problem. And we have talked about this on this broadcast. Virtually every news organization out there focuses on it. The major health crisis. Yes, that's what it is. A medical crisis, a crisis of violence, a crisis of danger, lack of security as a result of the gun culture that we have created in the United States of America. In a show of just a couple of weeks ago, talked about the demographics and the statistics of gun violence in America. And we've got more of that just this past week. Also talked about the implications of these major cases, one of them called Heller, issued by the Supreme Court about 15 years ago. Another one called Bruin just last June, establishing for the first time in our nation's history after 240 years that the Constitution establishes a right to gun possession and carry in public. In public, a change in our common understanding of the Second Amendment that had been in place for over 240 years. In the wake of that, and even as we were going off the air last week, last Saturday, we know that another tragic event happened. This one in Allen, Texas, at something called the Allen Premium Outlets, about 25 miles just north of Dallas. about 3:30 in the afternoon, Saturday, May 7th. And we know as well that the victims of that particular shooting age anywhere from 5 to 61. We know because of the quick and effective response of a law enforcement officer who happened to be on site at that time. We know that the shooter, a fellow named Mauricio Garcia, is 33, was killed at the scene. We know as well that 8 other people were killed as a result of his melee, 7 others injured, still recovering from those horrific injuries. And Mauricio Garcia, this person who perpetrated this latest mass shooting in America, armed with an AR-15 type weapon. And we've talked about this before. We're in the time in our nation between 1994 and 2004 when we had a ban on those kinds of weapons. We know that these kinds of events decreased in number, not overnight, but decreased in number. That's the kind of thing that Bill was talking about before. The legislation needs to be enacted to restore that, to establish other reasonable reactions to our gun problem in America, including universal background checks. We've chatted about those before, including extreme risk protection orders, other mechanisms for ensuring people are safe and secure in their homes and outside of their homes, mechanisms for ensuring that there are ways in which we can promote our safety and security generally. In the wake of what happened last Saturday after we went off the air, went back and looked at some of the mass shootings. Again, those are interpreted to be situations where 4 or more people are shot, not necessarily killed, but shot in these instances. 4 or more people shot. The accepted estimate today is we've had more than 200 of those now in 2023 alone. Looking back at some of those, obviously that one of the most recent ones in Allen, Texas. But remember the names. Again, the stories, regrettably, a sign of the onslaught that is being accomplished by this gun culture. We can't even recall off the top of our heads the specifics of all of these, but we remember the names in many ways of the places where they've happened. And yes, indeed, just because we can't recall them doesn't mean that we hold the deaths and the injuries in anything less than great reverence and concern about our nation. Remember back in January, in places like Goshen, Monterey Park, and Half Moon Bay, Los Angeles, and California. February, Washington, D.C., East Lansing, Michigan. Remember that? Tate County, Mississippi, Memphis, Tennessee. In March, Nashville, Tennessee, that shooting at the elementary school. Again, grabbing the attention appropriately of our entire nation. In April, in Louisville, Kentucky, Dadeville, Alabama, Cleveland, Texas. Again, events that we know are in our recent history. And yes, in this May, in this month of May, not just in Allen, Texas, but in Henrietta, Ohio, and Atlanta, Georgia, matters we've all talked about. The issue continues, and it will continue again until the point the bill is making is understood, and that is we need, both in terms of our state legislatures, even some local authorities, and certainly our federal government needs to address this issue. The other significant thing that happened and coming out of the courts in the wake of Bruin is we do have judges weighing in on these things as well. And this opinion in Bruin issued by the Supreme Court last June is prompting a litigation around the nation about whether or not restrictions, limitations, controls on government and on the sale, the use, the manufacture of guns through government can in fact be implemented. We know that in both Heller and in Bruin, the Supreme Court specifically endorsed language that said that, yes, reasonable restrictions and limitations on gun use and carry and manufacture and sale and possessions, all of those kinds of things are proper and constitutional and legal, and so let's do them. Even so, just this past week, in federal district court in Richmond, Virginia, a judge named Robert Payne struck down some federal laws that blocked handgun sales to buyers who are over 18 and under 21. And that a ruling that can augur the rollback of regulation prompted by the Supreme Court's very sweeping expansion of gun rights again in Bruin of just last year. The judge in that case, Robert Payne, said a citizen's Second Amendment right does not vest at age 21, 71-page ruling. The judge was appointed by George Bush. He repeatedly recited this majority opinion in Bruin, New York State Rifle Association, which again struck down that New York law that put limits on carrying guns outside the home. Now, significantly, importantly, the Department of Justice is expected to appeal that ruling of the district court judge to the appellate court judge. But nonetheless, if it remains in place, it has a significant impact upon the further proliferation of our gun culture in America, permitting people under the age of 21 to buy guns. I would offer that that's going in the wrong direction. We look forward to appellate action on that. We know as well that other pieces of litigation going forward, getting mixed results around the country. Some places acknowledging that there are limits on the manufacture and sale and use and possession, carry of guns. Others looking at Bruin, looking at Heller and saying that that means what it says and says what it means, and therefore giving life to this very expansive view of the Second Amendment that until 15 years ago in our nation was not the law of our land. Lots of things to consume there, lots of things to revisit about guns in America. We will continue to do that in the future. We're going to go back to some callers now as well. Joe, you've been on the line for a while. Joe, thanks for calling in this morning into our discussion about the rule of law in America.
That's the best way to segue I can think of, and thank you for the opportunity. As always, a great show. I wanted to respond to an event, and I know you're going to be covering the situation of ex-President Trump and Jean Carroll.
Yes.
But I wanted to lead into it based off of a remark that Mark made in the last hour. He spoke of the divine right of kings, which had been the deal up until our resistance against it and the creation of our country, but also it changed within England too. There is not, if you will, a divine right of kings. It is, they have a parliament, they have a system
right,
of government.
Right.
I would argue that what happened with this situation with Jean Carroll, and I'd like your thoughts on this, if not, you know, immediately, maybe later in the hour. I was furious, and he goes through a trial in which he is found guilty by a jury of his peers, including more men than women.
Six men, three women.
Hours.
Exactly, Joe. Yep.
Yes. Right. And so there we end up with this, by a jury of his peers, that he is guilty of battery and defamation of this woman. No contrition, no shame, no. And instead, what he argues is he reiterates in the town hall within shortly after that judgment that he has what he has claimed before, which is if you're rich, if you're powerful, if you're a star, people let you get away with it. Again, it is this idea that it's divine right of kings, except put on divine right of the rich, the powerful. If you're a star, it's a divine right to do what you want to women. I would argue that everyone in this country ought to be concerned about it. Obviously women, but also men. This is your wife, your girlfriend,
absolutely,
your daughter, your nieces, all that can be, the rich guy can get away with it. And it's not, to me, it's not even just women. If the rich guy can get away with it, then certainly the priest can get away with battering of children in that issue. I would really like your response to how easily this break of a rule by democracy, and instead what's being offered by Mr. Trump is a rule by force and a rule by the powerful, not a rule by democracy. I'd be anxious to hear your thoughts on this, if not immediately, sometime within the
absolutely,
hour. Thanks
Joe.
So much for the show.
Absolutely, Joe. Again, appreciate your comments, which I endorse completely. Begin right now. We'll continue those after the break as well. Could not emphasize enough what Joe has just said. That is, we are a nation where the rule of law should reign supreme. We know that not only because our Supreme Court has told us that, but members of our legislature, our executive branch, and yes, our judiciary have affirmed that. When we come back right after this break, I'm going to give some more insight into what Joe has just said, talk about the verdict in the E. Jean Carroll matter, some implications of that, and again, harkening back to this notion of the fact that we do not have a king, we do not have royalty, we have got the rule of law in America. Stay with us for that. With us for that.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW. Here's what's going on around the area.
The new Master Gardener 23rd Annual Plant Sale is at the STEM Center, UWGB campus, May 11th through the 13th. You'll find a great variety of flowers, vegetables, perennials, and native plants. If you love pets, gotta check it out. All about pets and animals at the Green Bay Pet Expo at the Resch Center. That takes place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 12th, 13th, and 14th. Great night of indoor football awaits you on Saturday, the 13th. Green Bay Blizzard Indoor Football, the kickoff at 3:05 p.m. And finally, the AVB Concert Band presents its final concert of the season Monday, April 15th at the Ashwaubenon Performance Center, showtime 7 o'clock. If you have an event you'd like us to tell others about, we'd love to help you out. Email it to info@civicmedia.us. We are the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Highs around 65 this afternoon under overcast skies. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again. Tonight, slight chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 49. Slight chance for scattered showers. Tomorrow, highs level off around 61. Cloudy skies expected. Dry with temperatures a bit above average Monday and Tuesday, and highs from the low 70s to the mid 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media.
And we are back right before the break, talking with Joe, who called in to note this very important civics lesson and also observation about where we are in America in 2023, commenting about our former president, Donald Trump, and his reaction at this so-called town hall meeting, this public presentation of many, many issues on his mind and also in the minds of America, but nonetheless, perversions of what we understand to be the rule of law in America. Joe was commenting with appropriate outrage about the notion that our former president not only doubled down on the notion that the verdict in the E. Jean Carroll matter was unjustified, but advanced this view, and Joe called it, again, the divine right of kings, something we have put behind us in this country for well over 240 years, that Donald Trump articulating this view that he can do whatever he wants because of his stature, his status as a former president, perhaps as a future president, if that should happen in America. And a very important point to make, and that is that we do live in a rule of law. The notion, number one, that Donald Trump should not understand that verdict as the rule of law, as a judgment of a court, is troubling at the lowest level, that someone like that would not understand that the process of the rule of law is what guides our country, gives us life, gives us livelihood, and indicating along the way that he would presumably not only object to that to some restrictions on his behavior imposed by the rule of law and by statutes and by other provisions that ensure our safety and security. Outrageous, as Joe was commenting. What do we know about the Jean Carroll verdict? We know that very, very quickly after having this matter presented to it, as Joe indicated, a jury of three women and six men returned a verdict 3 hours after having been given the case by the judge, returned a verdict finding that, yes, indeed, the former president had defamed E. Jean Carroll in calling her a liar, saying that this event had never happened at all, talking about this as a hoax. Hoax made up for political purposes, and also finding significantly that the event itself happened. And according to the verdict forum in particular, that the event was in the nature of sexual abuse under the law. And returning this verdict of $5 million, including damages for defamation, including damages for that sexual event itself, and also giving him giving G. Jean Carroll $20,000 in punitive damages. That's the jury saying that not only are we trying to restore imperfectly, money does not restore this kind of damage and injury that she undisputably suffered, but also we're going to punish you, Mr. Trump, for the behavior in which you have engaged. It is indeed, as Joe indicated, outrageous that 24 hours later, not only repudiating that verdict, but doubling down on his continuing view that what he did was, he denies it, number one, but during the course of the trial, that he is supposedly above the law. And we know that is not the case in America. Offer that, as outrageous as that entire presentation was at the CNN MAGA rally, which was broadcast for all America to see, that is precisely a demonstration of the kind of person who cannot be a chief executive of the United States of America, not only for all the policy reasons he indicated, but as Joe has indicated, others this morning indicated, someone who does not appreciate the fact that the law applies to them. And as the Supreme Court has said repeatedly, no one is above the law, including the President of the United States of America. Joe, appreciate very much your comments, those of others this morning. Let's talk about someone else also in the news, also perhaps not appreciating fully the ways in which the nation's rules and laws apply to him, and that is George Santos. George Santos charged this week not for the lies that he has perpetrated on not only his own constituents, but also upon others, but also for financial misdeeds in which he has engaged. Just this past week, the U.S. Department of Justice returning the news of a grand jury indicting George Santos, this New York congressman, with 13 counts of money laundering, stealing public money, wire fraud, making false statements to Congress. Prosecutors saying, the attorney general announcing, that these charges relate to fraudulent schemes and brazen misrepresentations. They're designed to mislead donors, to enrich Mr. Santos, to win a seat in Congress, where he presently does still represent the people of Queens. The bulk of those charges, again, rule of law in America this past week, returning an indictment against this person based upon probable cause found by a jury that George Santos engaged in these activities. The bulk of those charges relating to what the prosecutors said was a 2022 scheme. Santos solicited at least $50,000 in donations from some of his political donors, people contributing to his campaign for Congress, for a fake and a non-real super PAC, and then pocketed some of that money for personal expenses. What do those include? Things like luxury goods, designer clothing. That is in violation of the federal election laws. That's in violation of our fundamental notion about how government actors should in fact act. A part of that arrangement, is that Santos committed 5 counts of wire fraud as a candidate and an unnamed political consultant in this charging document told potential donors in emails and text messages that their contributions would, of course, exclusively only support the Republican campaign and pay for his TV ads. All of that in violation of the rule of law, in violation of the federal statutes as well. We know beyond that there was also charges that he engaged in a certain kind of unemployment fraud too. And that had to do with his earning $120,000 through his employment at a Florida-based investment company at the same time that he was collecting $24,000 in benefits. All of that a part of the indictment against George Santos, a sitting member of Congress, rule of law in America, and the trial presumably happening sometime either later this year, next year, for their pretrial proceedings coming up soon in the federal court in New York. Stay with us after this break for more discussion and more callers calling in here on Morning Cannolis. When you're sleeping, smile so comfortable. I just wish that I could give you that bad look that's perfectly unsaid. Sometimes all I think about is you. Wish that I could give you.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
AT&T ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Few signs of the chaos at the southern border that was feared following a rush by worried migrants to enter the U.S. before the end of Title 42 pandemic-related immigration restrictions, but there's scarce room for the asylum seekers that have already arrived. ABC's Matt Rivers is at the border in El Paso, Texas.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of migrants that were camped out have all finally been taken in by immigration officials. But here on the U.S. side, so many migrants have crossed that authorities simply do not have the capacity to hold all of them while asylum claims are processed.
G7 top financial leaders ending 3 days of talks in Japan, pledging to bring inflation under control, strengthening supply chains. Both Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Trump getting up close and personal with voters in Iowa today. The FDA approving the first once-a-day hormone-free treatment for menopause related to hot flashes. Holds hope for women who can't take hormone treatments because of underlying health concerns. This is ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Healthcare is the number one concern for people in Wisconsin. That's according to the Conservative Institute for Reforming Government, which recently held 42 listening sessions in 25 communities around Wisconsin. The study found adults of all ages are concerned about access to care, declining mental health, and about addiction. An historic overhaul of Wisconsin's shared revenue system is one step closer to passing the legislature. The Assembly's Local Government Committee sent the bill to the full Assembly yesterday. Democrats are raising objections about strings attached to the bill, but Republican Chairman Todd Novak says Democrats have had their chance to shape it.
Yes, it is a Republican bill, but your party did have a lot of input and suggestions and stuff.
Governor Evers says he'll veto the bill without big changes. In sports, the Brewers host Kansas City tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Smell that? That's the smell of carefully crafted coffee being poured into your cup with natural notes you can truly taste and freshness you can count on. The High Lift is the only standalone late-day coffee shop in Two Rivers, offering local bakery items with spacious lawn and outdoor seating. The High Lift takes time to weigh out their ingredients, so every sip is perfect. The High Lift, 1207 Madison Street in Two Rivers, and on Facebook.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
We are back. Thank you for staying with me on this morning here in Morning Cannolis. We're chatting about some of the significant criminal and civil litigation in America. Right before the break, talking about this returned indictment by a federal grand jury against George Santos, a representative from New York. Also talking about the significant trial or pettit jury verdict in the E. Jean Carroll matter. Why am I talking about all those things this morning? The answer is they're illustrations of exhibits in America of the rule of law. Why? Because with respect to the George Santos matter, and yes, indeed, he is presumed innocent until proven guilty. That doesn't come just from the desk of the attorney general or from a United States attorney. That's 26 people gathered together. We don't know their names. They act in private, which is appropriate under our Constitution and under the rules of federal procedure, but they look at evidence, and they found by probable cause that these events that I described before the break with respect to George Santos did in fact take place. Those are members of the public looking at the evidence and coming to the conclusion that probable cause supports these charges against this sitting representative. Similarly, we've got this civil jury in New York in connection with the E. Jean Carroll matter. 9 people, 6 men, 3 women, very quickly but nonetheless studiously coming to the conclusion based upon what they saw in the trial, in the courtroom itself, that indeed she was defamed. Indeed, she was the victim of sexual abuse and of the kinds of things that Donald Trump had done to her in that department store back in the 1990s in Manhattan, specifically finding that sexual abuse had taken place, that in the verdict form that the jury returned this past week. We know as well, as we talked last week, that with respect to the Proud Boys, that is the group of people charged with seditious conspiracy, a jury looking at the evidence, not prosecutors, who again brought the charges, who prosecuted the case, but people in the public, you and me and everyone from bankers to teachers to masons to construction workers to healthcare providers, educators, everyone out there, brought in and required to ask to look at evidence coming to these conclusions. I would offer you this morning that is the rule of law in America, coming to verdicts based not upon politics, based not upon what talking heads on the news shows may tell you to think, but what's in the courtrooms, what they have seen before them. And that is the reason why we should celebrate the systems that we have here in the United States of America, where people, juries of peers, make these decisions in the end about who gets indicted and who doesn't, and who gets convicted, whether civilly or criminally, of offense conduct in our nation. We know as well that in the wake of one of those other convictions having to do with the Oath Keepers, that is a group also prosecuted for seditious conspiracy, 2 different trials, that the sentencing, also a part of the rule of law, of a fellow named Stuart Rhodes is coming up May 25th. And Stuart Rhodes, again, going to be back in the federal court in Washington, D.C., and the decision is going to be made about how long he will spend in federal prison for his involvement in January 6th, and in particular, his leading the Oath Keepers for that involvement, providing that guidance and that attempt to overthrow our government, a finding there also by a jury, a nonpartisan, nonpolitical jury, that seditious conspiracy was supported by the evidence in trial. A significant thing happening just this past week in anticipation soon, May 25th, of the criminal sentencing in federal court of this leader, Stuart Rhodes. The government seeking a term of imprisonment for up to 25 years. 25 years asking for that under the sentencing guidelines and under the provisions for seditious conspiracy. Significantly, his attorney, not surprisingly, this is the advocacy that defense counsel necessarily needs to do. They are a key part of our system. The defense counsel, on behalf of his client, asking for time served. Highly unlikely, the federal district court is going to grant that. But a recommendation, obviously, that the court not adopt the recommendation of the government for 25 years in jail, probably going to be sentenced to much closer to that level, if not that level, for the kind of seditious conspiracy that Stuart Rhodes and then others to be sentenced down the road. Significantly, interestingly, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, has to be. The counsel for Stuart Rhodes has also filed a sentencing memorandum in which he has said, not only has my client properly and appropriately served in the military service, he is entitled to some consideration for that, but also touting Rhodes' very founding of the militia that was responsible for the seditious conspiracy, the attempt to overthrow our government on January 6th, advancing this notion that because Stuart Rhodes was good in organizing and developing and administering and overseeing this entity, he should be given credit for his operational administrative skill in doing so. And for that reason, he should be given some consideration in sentencing. I would offer that that is one that the federal district court is going to dismiss fairly summarily. We'll look forward to the sentencing again. Rule of law in America, people sentenced upon a finding of guilt by a criminal jury there unanimously, that beyond a reasonable doubt as to not only Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers, but also people like Enrique Tarrio, the Proud Boys, that we talked about that last week. In the civil setting, matters going forward, E. Jean Carroll, not a criminal matter, but a judgment of $5 million decided by what group? A group of people in America looking at the evidence and saying, we are going to deliver justice here. And then also a grand jury this past week finding that George Santos must face the bar of the courtroom of New York based upon his fraud affected on not only the election laws and violation of the election laws in America, but upon his own constituents there in New York. All of that rule of law discussed here this morning on Morning Cannolis. We also have some callers. Appreciate the callers. Dana, you've been waiting on the line for a while. Your comment, your question, your observation this morning on our broadcast.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I just want to thank you for this great show you offer. It's a valuable service, and I don't think there's many like it on the radio in America. So thank you for what you do,
Thanks
Jim.
Thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate
that. Absolutely. My question is about what's going to happen in going forward with Jack Smith, January 6th investigations, and so on. Frankly, Jim, I feel harmed by this ever since the day it happened. I feel this has greatly damaged our country, my view on my country, my view on my fellow citizens, because of the lies that have been propelled by our leaders.
Yes.
And many of them involved, and that's what my main worry is, Jim, is accountability for those that are deeply involved. And I mean everybody from Ron Johnson and his participation in the electors all the way down to Lauren Boebert and her tweeting out Nancy's whereabouts during the day.
Right.
It's obviously deeply conspiratorial, many, many, many people involved. And are we going to see accountability for all these people?
Right.
That's important to me, and I'd be happy to take your comments off the air.
Dana,
thanks
so much for the call. Appreciate it very much, and what a profound statement to make. It's all about accountability, right? Civil cases, criminal cases. This one, as you have highlighted, especially important in the history of our nation because something terrible happened, right? We have now got verdicts, as just mentioned, with respect to Proud Boys and others, the Oath Keepers, finding that there are people in our nation who specifically were there on January 6th before and on that day, who attempted to overthrow our nation. That's criminal conduct. That is some accountability. Plainly, there are about 1,000 other people who are facing now charges, about 450, 500 of them also adjudicated in our system, some of those being given time served, home detention, others of them being given significant periods of time. We know from our discussion just last week that one of those defendants being given 14 years in prison for his involvement, his violent involvement on January 6th. That, too, is accountability at that level for the people on the ground on January 6th. But, Dana, your very important point about accountability just beyond the physical harm done to the Capitol, done to on that day. Five people died, as we know, on January 6th. Many, many others injured very seriously. The effect upon the damage done to our national psyche. I think that's what you're talking about, Dana. The notion that we have a government, at least portions of it, not everyone, but plainly we've got portions, people representing our government in Congress, in the state houses around our nation who look at that. And to this day, even after these findings by juries, as sentencings go forward, as we continue to investigate and prosecute federally, and yes, probably also coming out of the state of Georgia, We haven't talked about it this morning, but Fannie Willis, you made a cryptic reference to it, Dana, finding that the grand jury there, an investigative grand jury, finding that people should be indicted for violations of Georgia law in connection with the attempt to overthrow and overturn the electoral votes in that state. Fannie Willis, probably sometime between late summer and maybe about July and into the fall, going to seek from an indicting grand jury in Georgia charges against people who are involved in that scheme with respect to Georgia to overturn the election results in that state. Also seeking accountability through our processes, our rule of law systems. And Dana, the point you make cannot be overstated, and that is the harm to our nation generally, the harm that you feel. I think every American, every reasonable, rational American should look at this and say, yes, this horrible thing happened. We should support every effort to bring people to accountability in our courts. And there should also needs desperately to be accountability for the ways in which we speak about this. This was not tourists coming into our nation's capital. If you do that, if you want to go there, you can, in fact, visit the capital as a tourist. You get tickets from your congressman or your senator. There are tours that you can undertake. This was not that. This was an assault. This was an attack upon our nation. And Dana, your point is, who is responsible ultimately for this? And what is Jack Smith looking at? And that's exactly what he is, in fact, focusing on. Undeniably, he continues also to present evidence before what? A federal grand jury, maybe several grand juries in Washington, D.C. Who are those people? Once again, 26 people gathered together. We do not know their names. They're pulled from the population. And they are called together to review the evidence presented by Jack Smith, by others, witnesses undeniably coming in, some of them voluntarily, some of them not, some of them being compelled to testify. We know that our vice president, just a couple of weeks ago, our former vice president, I should say, Mike Pence, compelled by the court to come in and testify about what he knows. And what is the focus of that? What did people at the top layers of our government, what were they doing? What were they thinking? What was their intent in any way in encouraging and urging in any way the assault upon our Capitol? We know from public things that Donald Trump has said that he certainly implicitly, if not explicitly, encouraged this, not only on the lips, but on things he said on Twitter, on other social media long in advance of January 6th. That's exactly what Jack Smith is looking at. Prosecutors in the District of Columbia, Maine Justice, and also in the U.S. Attorney's Office, focusing, Dana, on exactly what you've described here. The difficulty and the point I would make, Dana, I think it's yours as well. We can prosecute. We can return an indictment or indictments against the Donald Trumps of the world who are responsible for this and people around them in the circle who perpetuate this notion that somehow the election of 2020 was stolen and needs to be taken back. But what do we do about our national reputation, our history? We need desperately to push back, as Dana, you are doing by your statements and others out there, on this notion that this wasn't anything other than a violent attack upon the notions, the basic constructs of our republic, and that for that reason, Americans need to be taught civics, need to be understood that the ways of addressing disputes is not through violence, not by attacking government, but by petitioning government. All three branches, the executive branch, the judicial branch, and yes, even the judiciary, for doing what it needs to do under our Constitution of the United States and also of all of the states of our union. All that very important. And recognizing, too, that people like Dana have standing to make that argument, feeling harmed by virtue of things said and misrepresenting the history recent of our nation. Come back for our final segment. We're going to talk more with another caller yet on the line and then also conclude with some comments about our United States Supreme Court. Stay with us for that discussion.
Just can't make it all alone. I'm holding on, I can't fall back. I'm just a call, but your face. I'm begging you, put your loving hand out, baby. I'm begging you, to put your loving hand out, darling. I'm begging you, to
shepherd's.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats. And there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGB. And on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Highs around 65 this afternoon under overcast skies. Winds out of the northeast, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again. Tonight, slight chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 49. Slight chance for scattered showers. Tomorrow, highs level off around 61. Cloudy skies expected. Dry with temperatures a bit above average Monday and Tuesday. And highs from the low 70s to the mid 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
And we're back. Thanks again for joining me this morning on Morning Cannolis, our final segment, talking in our few moments left here this morning about the rule of law and about January 6th and things happening around our country. Another significant event happening right here in the state of Wisconsin with respect to a focus that Fannie Willis also has there in Georgia. She is also focusing on this fake electors situation, people coming forward and saying that, in fact, I am an elector not for the person who won the election in Georgia, and that would be Joe Biden, but for Donald Trump, who actually lost the election. We have the same situation here in Wisconsin, as you all well know. Some significant news just this past week in connection with our group of fake electors here. Wisconsin judge, his name is Frank Remington, Dane County Circuit Judge, said that he's going to order the State Election Commission to reconsider a complaint filed against some of these fake electors who in 2020 attempted to cast our state's electoral ballots for former President Donald Trump. Said the commission must consider the complaint without the participation of one of its 6 commissioners, who is also incredibly among those fake electors. His name, Commissioner Robert Spindell. The judge said this, surprise, surprise, I'm coming to the same conclusion as all the parties have, that the appropriate remedy is to vacate the decision of the WEC, the Election Commission, and remand it back for further proceedings which don't include Commissioner Spindell. Spindell, one of the 3 members of the commission that also has on a 3 Democratic members, oversees elections in Wisconsin. I would offer that is good news in terms of attempting to restore some sense of the thing that Dana was talking about, that is sense of reputation, of commitment to who we are in America. We'll see where that goes, but important issue right here in the state of Wisconsin in connection with January 6th and the fake electors matter, again, being pursued again here in Wisconsin, also on the docket of Jack Smith in Washington, D.C., the special counsel looking at all things January 6th. We've got more callers on the line here in our last few moments. Tom, thanks for calling in. Thanks for waiting on the line. Your comment or question this morning.
Hi there. Just getting back to the gun stuff. I just heard about this morning, and I looked it up while I was waiting here. Supreme Court case seeks to legalize assault weapons in all 50 states. Apparently on the shadow docket, they have this case coming up, and that they want to talk about and rule on a case for banning vocal bans on all AR-15s and the like. And that they're hoping that people are hoping that they'll just, you know, do a written thing and open it up so that later on they can vote on the whole thing and have a real debate or what have you about this.
Right. Just coming up from the lower courts, right, this, again, the question of this issue of state bans on AR-15s, those kinds of things, in the wake of Bruin, as we discussed, is that constitutional or is it not? The Supreme Court has plainly opened up in the case you're describing here, Tom, but also in other areas, this whole Pandora's box now about what is proper and what is not under Bruin. And again, you made reference to the shadow docket. Haven't yet decided what the Supreme Court's going to do in that particular matter. We're going to talk about that matter and many others in the weeks ahead as they make decisions about what it's going to review and what it's not, plainly depending upon what it does procedurally, taking the case or not. Lower court rulings will stand or not, depending upon the Supreme Court's disposition. But again, this notion that Bruin has opened up the doors and the Supreme Court cannot run away from the notion that now has to make these decisions about what America is going to be in the wake of its further expansion of the Second Amendment. Great comment, Tom, about what's continuing to happen before our United States Supreme Court. Appreciate calling in about that. Mark from Sussex, you're also on the line this morning. Your comment, your question, your observation for us today.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And I may have missed this, but did you comment at all about either Hunter and probably Joe Biden being subpoenaed and more than likely going to trial? In particular, I mean, Hunter, why hasn't he been held accountable for his, I guess he broke the probation, he had a gun, had some other stuff. Did you make any comments on that earlier? I may have missed it.
Sure. I appreciate the comment, Mark. The answer is no, we haven't addressed that. That is one of the many matters that, again, are pending under investigation. Undeniably, the president has said about his own son that he supports him without commenting upon the legitimacy or the status of the case. The Department of Justice is investigating that. Justice is investigating everything else out there. And at some point, we'll make some decisions about prosecution of Hunter Biden, the various matters that have been out there in the media. Again, we don't know. We shouldn't know what a grand jury may be looking at, but that too, rule of law, the kind of thing that the Department of Justice looking at, in again, underscoring this notion, which is the theme of this morning, no one above the law, including members of the president's family. And so, again, a part of the investigation going forward. I'm sorry, go ahead.
A lot of stuff came out this week, kind of following the money of the whole Biden family. I mean, if you did have any interest in it, it was actually quite alarming as to the amount of dummy corporations that were set up and the millions and millions of dollars that were covered up.
And those are the kinds of things, Mark, again, that in our system of justice, the folks who are responsible for investigating and prosecuting, they take a look at it. We see a lot of things in the media in all directions, all parties, all sides of the political aisle that are out there. Some of them are real, some of them are not. We wait to see what has been in violation of our federal, our state, our local laws, and we go through the system that prompts a review of that in our courts. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it very, very much. In our closing moments here, wanted to talk again about the Supreme Court and wanted to indicate that in the future, we're going to be talking about many, many cases that it's going to be deciding on its docket. That's going to begin next week and continue well into June. A little bit of anticipation of that. One of the subjects we're going to talk about again is this notion of an ethics code for the United States Supreme Court. Significant events just this past week. We know that the Supreme Court, through the work of the Chief Justice, has referred matters related to the actions and engagements of one of the Supreme Court justices, Clarence Thomas, with this fellow named Harlan Crow. There's something called the Committee on Financial Disclosure. It's one of the 20 deliberative bodies within something called the Judicial Conference. Meets twice a year under the direction of the Chief Justice and makes recommendations. It's going to be taking a look at that. And again, issues related to recusal and money, all sorts of other things that we have talked about in great detail. That committee, its work going to be proceeding. And again, under the auspices of the Chief Justice, does not replace the need for an ethics code administered by or established either by the Congress or by the Supreme Court itself. In the times ahead, the weeks ahead, we're going to talk more about the Supreme Court. Join us for those conversations, including conversations about everything from the Commerce Clause to gerrymandering to health care in America to the environmental cases to the legitimacy of agencies. All of those on the docket of the Supreme Court. Necessarily, they're also on the docket here of Morning Cannolis. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Looking forward to having you back again with us next week and the weeks that follow. Have a good week, everybody.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the story of
ABC News. I'm Dave Powell.